just relax and listen to the radio.
You're listening to Grant Edwards, 88.1 FM, The Wireless, the world at 5.
And a very good morning to you, and welcome along to the program, The World at 5. And this morning we're going to be looking at some news, and local news and international news. We'll also look at the weather as well for the country right up until Tuesday. We'll be going to Weather Watch with Philip Duncan. All right, but before we do, let's have a listen to Katie Hopkins. She's going to tell us how cancel culture evisceration really works.
I thought it'd be great to explain how cancel culture really works, or in my case, complete evisceration. And this relates to what's currently being done to GB News by those that want to see it done away with. So when people speak about cancel culture, it kind of annoys me because it sounds so polite. Oh, cancelled. You know, that's for someone that maybe had one event cancelled, or, you know, they were uninvited from something, or they weren't invited in the first place. You know, people speak about that. Oh, I've been cancelled. And that really is just like dipping a toe in the ocean in terms of what happens when you are completely eviscerated. And that's happened to me on a number of occasions, each one adding to the sum total of being completely eviscerated from the face of the planet, including, you know, continents from which I'm banned. So let's just say, let's not make this about me, but let's make this about GB News. OK, so GB News are here, and the idea is, from those that want to control the news agenda and the messaging that goes out, that GB News needs to be got rid of because it's not towing the line, it's not saying the same stuff as everybody else, and it's not necessarily kind of perceived by the intellectual elite, you know, as intellectually stimulating enough. It's far too Daily Mail. Well, who gives a shit? If ordinary people want to watch it or someone wants to look at it, who cares? Who cares? It doesn't matter what you think people should be listening to. Ordinary people should be allowed to listen to what the bloody hell they like. Who cares whether you agree or I agree? People should do what they want. People should be free to do what they want. Let me not go off on one. So if you want to get rid of GB News, the first thing you do, and I know this because this was me, has been me, is repeatedly me, it is your evisceration. Firstly, you go for the advertisers. And this is a well-tested system. So you know that what happens is there's a campaign against anybody advertising on the channel, and you go onto Twitter, and then one by one you pick off the organizations, you tweet them, are you happy to be associated with this? You go for the CEO of the advertisers, you go for the exec board of the advertisers, you go for anybody linked in any way to the advertising companies, and then once you manage to get one to pull, then you say, oh, well, look, Nike's just made the right decision. Why don't you make the right decision? So the advertisers are an easy, well-tested route for getting rid of either people or entire channels. The next thing is things like Ofcom, which is what you're seeing right now with GB News. A repeated war of attrition. You just keep trying to get an Ofcom complaint to stick. You just keep trying to get an Ofcom complaint to be investigated. That's boring for the channel. It costs time, legal advice, money. You know, it's time consuming and it's obnoxious, and it detracts from the ability to do what is the core focus of your business. So the Ofcom weapon is very effectively used. It was used against me at the Daily Mail, it was used against me at LBC, and there's very powerful people who are very well connected at Ofcom's highest level who can have cozy little dinners and strongly advise that Ofcom definitely investigate this. You can see how all that happens. Next up is guests. So what you do, forgive my writing, guests. You get guests. So on an LBC type program, a phone-in program, GB News, you get people to sign up to say they won't go on the show. We won't go on the show. We won't go on. Look at all the 80 of us have signed this list to say we won't appear on it because it's just so terrible. Will you join us? Will you be part of us? We can invite you to other things. We'll reward you. Maybe you'd like a little invite to dinner at Sophie's house on Friday. Would you like to sign up to say you will not be a guest on the show? And that's precisely the tactic that The Guardian, James O'Brien and others used against me at LBC, was to get political guests to say they would not appear on LBC radio as a whole until I was removed as a producer. And from the boss's perspective, you can't risk losing all your guests if you rely on political commentary to keep yourself alive. So the guest is the next thing. What you can also do, if you are a lone voice in a sea of lefties, for example, which I have always been, is you get the other presenters on board. So I don't know that this necessarily happens on GB News, but you see how divide and conquer. Well, you don't want to be near that person because, look, they're going to get fired. You don't want to be like Lawrence Fox, guys, because he just got fired. But you can get the other presenters. So if I give the LBC example, you get the other presenters to say, well, if I'm on leave, I'm not having Katie stand in on my show. Or until she's gone, I'm not prepared to do X, Y, and Z. Or you just get them all together to have a meeting with the boss that says she needs to go because we're all unhappy. So you can mobilise that as an opportunity as well. And that will be at play in GB News where people get picked off. And there's something much bigger that happens, and it's what I would call the real darkness. At some point, the cumulative effect of all of this is it starts to become too much. And at some point, and this has happened in every single case of every single position I've ever held and been eviscerated from, the darkness happens. And that's one big powerful phone call or meeting between either overseas money, whoever is the funder or the investment or the big money, the darkness, whoever is the real powerhouse in that place, they get the call and they make a decision just like this. That's it. They're gone. Gone. Done. So all of this other stuff is really just, you know, chipping away, chipping away, chipping away, noise, noise, relentless, relentless, in order to get this one phone call to happen. And in my case, for example, LBC, that was the major, that was the owner of the whole radio, of Global, who finally made the call and went, she's gone. The Daily Mail, Lord Rothermere was involved, and actually there was someone that leaked that. There's an inside person at the Daily Mail that leaked that the conversation had happened and I was being disposed of. So I knew 6 months before I was actually let go or agreed to leave. And in the case of GB News, that's the big, that's when will that happen? So overseas investors, because ultimately GB News doesn't really care. It's overseas investment money that's funding this thing. One day that tap gets turned off. And a good example most recently would be the Piers Morgan example. Talk TV, Murdoch, and Murdoch has been, you know, Piers and Murdoch are inseparable, have been for decades. Finally, that darkness was too much, even for Murdoch and Piers Morgan. And that conversation happened after Prince Harry's lawyer came out and specifically named Piers Morgan as being responsible or culpable. I know what happened. There'll have been a phone call from Murdoch to Piers just saying, sorry, mate, it's all too much now. We've got to let you go. So that's why Piers Morgan is now going to be a vlogger. And I would say, typically, I get no pleasure whatsoever from seeing other people being either cancelled or eviscerated or removed. There's, I mean, maybe a little bit of pleasure with Piers Morgan, but for everybody else, whether I'm on their side or not, whether they're a vaccine pusher or whatever, there's no pleasure in seeing other people get cancelled or eviscerated, because I think, you know, it doesn't improve the sum of all of our parts if conversations get fewer and less. Now, there's the, apart from the darkness, so that's a Murdoch level, that's a Lord Rothermere level, you know, that is at the darkness level of humanity, big overseas investment funders. There's also these other sort of minor players. So like, for example, with my case, the chief rabbi was involved. You get the heads of churches, you get the heads of some charities, Save the Children, Brendan Cox. There's some other things around this darkness, which I could go into, but we don't need to do that here. One of the most painful things of all about cancel culture or it being eviscerated, and this is all building around GB News right now. One of the hardest things, and I still find this now, it happened to me just this week. is you have people see all of this happen around you. And it's happened all my life, really, since I've refused to back down from anything I've ever said, is that people who call themselves the freedom movement, right? So people who are like, oh, we're the free speech movement, we're the free speech organisation, we're the free speech channel, or we're a freedom festival, or... So all of the people who I would say are our side that simply wants everyone to be okay, everyone to say and think whatever they want and everyone to be as happy as they can be, is when the freedom movement, using that label, using free speech, they don't want any of this coming anywhere near them. And it's one of the hardest things still, and like I say, it happened this week, is people take you on because they love what they do. Maybe they've met you in person. Maybe you've introduced them to your husband, or maybe you've allowed them to come to a gig and they've seen your audiences and they've seen how lovely it all is. But the moment they feel even a touch of any of this, you know, just maybe one other and one other guest saying, well, I'm not performing if she's performing, or if her name's there, or I get asked, is there anyone you won't perform with? And I'm like, why are you asking that question? And others out there will completely understand when I say it is what all of this I see happening. I see the strategy behind it. You know, I used to be in military intelligence. It's not hard to work this stuff out. And the darkness is really terrifying. But the hardest thing emotionally is when those who brand themselves free speech and freedom festival, they do this to you because they don't want this near them. They will throw you under the bus, even after they've booked you and they want to, and they've come to your gigs and they see what you're doing and they know that you're, even when they know you and they know that your heart is good, they still throw you under the bus and continue to use the freedom banner, even when they become part of the evisceration. And that's truly the very hardest thing of all. And, you know, I say all of this knowing what I've just said about how people don't want you near them because they want to self-preserve for one more day, even when they say that they're all about freedom of speech. But let's just not talk about Tommy or Katie, is that I am banned from GB News by these guys, the big guys, the money, the investors, the owners, those linked to the kind of money, 250 million in their accounts, some of these guys behind GB News, the very big money doesn't want any of this problem coming anywhere near it. So I just wanted to do that as an explainer, because there's so many, you know, I could do pages of level of detail behind this. But if you hear Ofcom investigation, please know that that's just a tiny piece of an overall strategic plan of attack that can be used to completely annihilate your enemy, which in my case was me, or is now GB News for them. I guess what they hadn't reckoned in on, and what they can never quite cope with still, the darkness, I mean, is when some of us refuse to stay down. When you come back after you've been eviscerated, when you were supposed to go and swing from a tree, and instead you just reinvent yourself and come back again. And that's how you win, I think, in the end. Okay, I'll see you all somewhere on the road.
88.1 FM, The Wireless, New Zealand News.
Alrighty, let's look at that New Zealand news. And first of all, News Hub, one of the key media companies in New Zealand, is to close its newsroom on the 30th of June. Staff were told of the closure at an emergency meeting on Wednesday morning. Despite the financial difficulty the company has cited, News Hub boss Glenn Klein was adamant that they would follow through on financial obligations to employees and suppliers, including redundancy pay. Lisa Owen from Radio New Zealand spoke with Glenn Klein following the shock announcement and its closure yesterday.
Are they going to get paid redundancy?
Of course. They will, you know, assuming that the proposal gets to a point where we confirm the decision, yes, but again, no decision's been made yet.
And have you got that money?
But the company will, absolutely, the company will act in good faith with all employees. You know, this is not an administration type event. You know, all of our obligations and commitments will be met.
So, Glenn, you are making assurances right now that you have money somewhere ring-fenced to pay redundancy should it come to it.
And I absolutely assure you that all of our obligations, whether that be employees, suppliers, whomever, all of those financial obligations will be met.
Can your new service actually make it to the end of June? Do you have the money to do that?
We can do. We, I guess one of the big considerations is where our people land and how they process, obviously, the news over the next few days. And, we're going to stay fluid on that. We would like it to be 30 June. We think giving people as much time from when a final decision is made until 30 June to process and then to think about what their next steps are and for us to, as an organisation, to help them is important. We will obviously be evaluating that week by week.
What about funding that you may have or been promised for programs? And by that, I mean public money. News Hub Nation, almost $1 million. Have you had any of that? And where is it?
Certainly, any taxpayer funding that we receive for any programming, our plan is to either continue, or if we are not continuing, to make sure that we hand any taxpayer funding back. We will not at all take taxpayer funding inappropriately.
How much do you need to pay back, do you know?
At this stage, I don't think we have anything to pay back, Lisa. As I said, the commitment is that, you know, anything that we have funded continues to play on air. Outside of New Zealand on-air funding, we're reviewing our broader content portfolio, and as I said, no decision has been made yet and won't be until post the consultation period.
Sarah Bristow resigned as Senior Director of News at Warner Brothers Discovery ANZ, which owns News Hub, leaving just weeks ago and not being replaced by a permanent news chief. But Kine said that she was not aware of this proposal prior and only a few people had knowledge of it. Ukraine pleads with Australia to donate desperately needed military equipment. The Ukrainian community has appealed directly to the Defence Minister, Richard Marles, to lead a whole-of-government approach to better coordinate Australia's military and humanitarian aid to the war-torn country. Queensland police are calling for women with relevant information to come forward after charging a 24-year-old man for allegedly knowingly spreading sexually transmitted diseases to women he met on social media. Detectives from Sarina Criminal Investigation Branch arrested the man on Tuesday as part of an investigation into the alleged acts. The man is from the Mackay region, but it is alleged he used dating and social media apps to meet with women in Queensland. Prince William pulling out of a memorial service for the late King Constantine of Greece is extremely concerning, according to a former royal butler. Grant Harold spoke with GB News about the Prince of Wales, who was due to deliver a reading at the event. William called the Greek royal family ahead of the service at St George's Chapel to inform them that he was unable to attend.
I think this is extremely concerning, because one thing I remember working in the royal household is that duty, as we know, with the late Queen, came before everything and anything within reason. And the fact that he's pulled out is, there's obviously something not right. Now, the first thing that comes to mind is everybody will be thinking, obviously, is it something to do with his father, the king? I don't think that. I think it is something more closer to home. It's possibly maybe something to do with Catherine, the Princess of Wales, because obviously she had that surgery a few weeks back. And a lot of people have said to me, you know, they've been very quiet since she's had it done. And obviously it's a very personal matter, so they've not discussed what it was about, the reasons, but it does cause concern, because suddenly to pull out due to a personal situation, of course it could be as simple as one of the children is maybe going down with a cold or flu or something, but I think immediately what I kind of think is something possibly more to do with the actual princess, and I just hope that it isn't anything too serious. But again, William has decided on this occasion to put his family before duty, which is not unreasonable, it's just it's quite unusual for them to do this.
Harold says that for the royals, duty comes before everything, and the prince's mysterious absence will not have been a decision taken lightly. Actor Gary Sinise, best known for roles in Forrest Gump, Of Mice and Men, and CSI New York, has announced the death of his son at age 33. McKenna Anthony Mack Sinise died on the 5th of January, his father has confirmed, and spent the last 5 years of his life battling a very rare cancer, Chordoma. Sinise broke the news with fans on the Gary Sinise Foundation website in the lengthy post detailing his son's battle. The chief executive of Kellogg's has come under fire after claiming struggling families can eat cereal for dinner if they're struggling to make ends meet. The American food company's boss, Gary Pilnick, who rakes in a basic salary of $1 million and over $4 million in incentives, was appointed to his post in October. He has claimed Kellogg's tried to price its products to appeal to different consumers. Pilnick says the cereal category has always been quite affordable and it tends to be a great destination when consumers are under pressure. The Tasmanian Racing Appeal Board has released its decision for overturning a ban against trainer Ben Yole and three drivers. Taz Racing issued the men with a warning off notice earlier this month following the release of a damning report into allegations of team driving, race fixing and animal welfare concerns. The men can now resume their careers with trainer Ben Yole expected to race horses in Hobart this Saturday. The CIA has built 12 secret spy forward operating bases in the thick Ukrainian forest along the Russian border. According to the New York Times, the American agency has trained and equipped Ukraine's intelligence officers in underground bunkers over the past 10 years, as well as fully financing and partially equipping them. Initially, U.S. intelligence was reluctant to work with Kiev because it feared that the Ukrainian officials that were part of the Soviet regime might be compromised and would pass information to Russia. War reporter David Patrick Karakas has reflected on the Russian invasion of Ukraine as this week marks the two-year anniversary. Speaking to GB News, he said that we're dealing with a dictator who believes there is no such thing as Ukraine.
I've been going to Ukraine for 10 years, but critically just after the all-out invasion last year, and there has been a change. On the front lines, troops remain very motivated. There is a clear understanding of what happens if Ukraine loses. This is existential. It's an overused word, but in this sense, it really is clear. They know what's coming. We're dealing with a Putin, a dictator who believes that there is no such thing as Ukraine. The Ukrainians are merely confused Russians. So the men on the front line, the men and women on the front lines, remain committed, but there are problems. There are problems with the supply of weapons. They haven't come in the right time and they're incomplete. There's also issues around Russian defenses. The Russians have mined, we're talking thousands of miles of mines here. It's almost impossible to break through without a serious uptick in the sophistication and quantity of weapons. As you mentioned as well, the Russians benefit from what I call the despot dividend. Putin is a despot, no one is going to push back on him. He can send wave after wave of Russian troops to their death. When I was in Bakhmut, the Ukrainian soldiers talked about meat waves. The Russians would just come at them. They'd gun them down with their artillery, but they would keep coming. So the situation is tough. Those who joined up after the all-out invasion are the most motivated. Now you're getting waves of conscripts. These are people who still want to fight, but they don't have adequate training often. We're talking about people being sent out after 5 weeks of training. In World War II, we sent people, even at the most desperate of times, with 22 weeks training. So the position is tough. They're facing serious challenges, but I want to make clear that, you know, Ukraine still resists. The people are still holding out, and they all understand what is coming if they lose.
Retired Army Colonel Douglas McGregor has a different perspective as he shares shocking truths with Stephen Garner about the Russian-Ukraine war, Zelensky, Putin, Israel and Iran. Colonel McGregor says the US government has become a money laundering machine for the rich.
We don't need to fund Ukraine any longer. We never needed to do so to begin with, but now it's patently obvious to even the casual observer that Ukraine is in ruins. That war is lost. And if there was a shred of humanity in anyone in Washington, D.C., we would work to stop this terrible war immediately. All it's done is pile up hundreds of thousands of dead Ukrainians, destroyed the economy, destroyed the country. The Russians have exerted enormous restraint. They're not pushing as fast as they could to the Dnieper River because they would like to see a settlement. And obviously, there's no interest in really crossing that river into the West because they don't want to rule Ukrainians. And the real Ukrainians, from an ethnic, cultural, and linguistic standpoint, are overwhelmingly west of that river. And they've had bad experiences with that in the past. Ultimately, what the Russians want to do is get back to business with the rest of the world, particularly the Europeans, with whom they had good relations, especially the Germans.
Colonel McGregor says the Washington, D.C. swamp is dirtier and deeper than we knew.
88.1 FM, The Wireless Weather.
A stormy low on Monday and Tuesday is expected to bring severe weather risks to both the main islands of New Zealand. But before it arrives, we have a big high pressure moving in, and it will cross the South Island today and then move on to the North Tasman Sea by Friday and also Saturday, and then north to northeast of New Zealand by Sunday and Monday. Behind the high comes in cloud and patchy rain showers, especially on Sunday. By Monday, the storm will be centred near the southern South Island and may well bring severe gales, heavy rain and some snow to the mountains too.
Grant Edwards, 88.1 FM, The Wireless.
To Sam Bailey is going to be telling us all about gonorrhea. Yep, I know it's bringing us a bit of breakfast, but this is important, very important. We've been led a dance about disease, and so Dr. Sam Bailey is going to put us on the right track.
When you point out the problems with germ theory and the fact that diseases such as influenza have never been shown to transmit between humans, the response is often, very well, but what about sexually transmitted diseases? Alleged STDs can be bacterial in nature, such as chlamydia and gonorrhea, parasitic, such as trichomoniasis, or, quote, viral, such as HIV and herpes. I thought it would be best to start the series with an alleged STD that is bacterial in nature, because with viruses, there is an additional issue regarding their very proof of existence. So let's take a look at one of the most famous alleged STDs of them all, gonorrhea. We'll see if there's any evidence to it being able to pass from human to human, or if this is germ theory nonsense and something else altogether is going on with the clap. A 2012 American Medical Association publication informs us that gonorrhea is an ancient disease that was transmitted by Chinese tradesmen bartering their goods, Greek soldiers fighting for new territory, and international businessmen travelling across the world. Galen, a Greek physician, AD 130 to 200, is credited with naming gonorrhea after gonos, semen, and rhoea, to flow. By the 1500s, gonorrhea's association with prostitution and sexual activity was noted. Gonorrhea continued to spread from Europe to the New World through seafaring sailors, despite medical advances in the effective treatment of gonorrhea with present-day antibiotics. The clap continues to spread. Not surprisingly, the majority of people are convinced at this point that we have proof of a sexually transmitted disease. However, when you are suspicious about germ theory claims, a good place to start is Wikipedia. This is not because it is a reliable source of truth, but because it often quickly reveals the lack of evidence behind commonly held beliefs. The page on gonorrhea gets straight into the claims and states that gonorrhea, colloquially known as the clap, is a sexually transmitted infection caused by the bacterium Neisseria gonorrhoeae. There is a single reference for this claim, which takes us to the CDC's gonorrhea fact sheet. So things are looking suspicious already, and we're probably only one step away from a fact-checking website. The CDC page lists 22 scientific references, but conspicuously, there is no reference for the statement that gonorrhea is a sexually transmitted disease caused by infection with the Neisseria gonorrhoeae bacterium. For the rest of their fact sheet, they cite studies concerning epidemiological observations, tests for gonorrhea, laboratory features and treatments such as antibiotics, but none of that constitutes evidence that gonorrhea is sexually transmitted in the form of an actual scientific study showing this is to be the case. And the claims that it is transmissible reached new heights in 2019 when a study concluded that men who have sex with men may be transmitting gonorrhea to each other by kissing. However, their study methodology reveals they were diagnosing, quote, gonorrhea by performing nucleic acid amplification tests on oropharyngeal swabs. The authors admitted the limitations of such tests, noting that we were not able to identify whether the organism was viable or not. In that case, and given they were not reporting on the condition of the subject's mouths, how can they make any claims about diagnosing cases of gonorrhea? And they are still making the assumption that the mere presence of viable Neisseria bacteria would mean the person has a disease. But wait, there's more, as there are even claims that you can get gonorrhea from a toilet seat. However, whether it is historical observations of patterns of gonorrhea, anecdotal stories about toilet seats, or local folklore, there remains a problem with the whole story, and that's actual evidence that human-to-human transmission takes place. Remember, we are not talking about the association of Neisseria with illness. We are talking about the specific issue of whether one person who has disease can pass it on to someone else via a microbe. Going back to Wikipedia, we can see the additional dramatic claim that men have a 20% risk of getting the infection from a single act of vaginal intercourse with an infected woman. However, there is no citation for this claim. So, let's have a look at any experimental animal models that have been used to demonstrate transmission. It seems in animals there are difficulties in demonstrating that the Neisseria bacterium alone can do anything to healthy specimens. One animal study is female mouse model of Neisseria gonorrhoeae infection, published in 2019. Now, because these so-called infection experiments don't tend to work with normal mice, they use a type of mice which are inbred, immunodeficient, and albino. These abnormal mice were then prepared with injected estradiol and multiple injections of the antibiotics, vancomycin, streptomycin, and trimethoprim over several days. Once prepped, 20 microliters of a concentrated Neisseria suspension was squirted into the vagina, and the mouse was held upside down for 1 minute. Now, taking an average weight of a 6-week-old female mouse to be around 17 grams, by weight this would be equivalent to squirting 70 mils of fluid into a human vagina. To put it in perspective, that's a volume of around a dozen ejaculates going in all at once. Overall, this is a ridiculous animal model to demonstrate that you can squirt bacteria up a vagina and then, amazingly, you can find the same bacteria in there. But then the, quote, infection starts resolving over the next few days as the bacteria are flushed out. In short, it is a contrived model that doesn't mirror anything that happens in nature. In any case, such experimental designs cannot show transmission of Neisseria between animals or that the bacterium alone can cause a disease state. As a side note, one article that caught my eye with regards to alleged in utero transmission was a 1999 paper titled Experimental Transmission of Neisseria gonorrhea from Pregnant Rat to Fetus. The methodology involved pregnant rats being, quote, infected by injecting bacterial suspensions directly into their abdomens and observing how it could result in fetal death. Such a physical violation is not something that happens in nature, so it can hardly be said to implicate Neisseria as a pathogen in normal settings. But what about the human experiments that were carried out last century? There was the 1944 gonorrhea experiment at the Terre Haute Federal Penitentiary in the United States. In this prison, the volunteers were deliberately injected with gonorrhea, but the Public Health Service had found it difficult to get the men to exhibit infection, and the study was abandoned. There was also an experiment that took place in Guatemala in the 1940s. With the cooperation of officials at the Ministry of Justice and the warden of Guatemala City Central's penitentiary, which housed nearly 1,500 inmates, prostitutes who tested positive for either syphilis or gonorrhea were allowed to offer their services to prison inmates, paid for by US taxpayers through the funds of the PHS. In yet another set of experiments, uninfected prostitutes had inoculums of the diseases placed on their cervixes before the sexual visits began. Serological tests were done on the inmates before the prostitutes were invited to the prison, and then afterward to see if infection had occurred. Rabbits, of course, were much easier to manage and manipulate than human beings, as the doctors soon discovered. Not enough of the sexually well-serviced men. The researchers actually timed how long they spent with the prostitutes and thought they acted like rabbits, even when plied with alcohol, seemed to be getting syphilis. Presumably the same, quote, problem was found with gonorrhea. But wait a minute, there's a lesser-known CDC document that claims that human experiments in the 1940s showed that gonorrhea has a whopping 30% infection rate. The document published in 2010 covers the Public Health Service's experiments, some of which I've just mentioned, and is based on the review of archived papers of John Cutler, MD, at the University of Pittsburgh. To me, it is odd that no one has put their name to the authorship of the document. It is simply marked as a CDC report, and it wasn't until a decade ago that they published a document claiming to prove such transmission. They state that a total of 772 subjects of individual experiments, some apparently representing the same patients involved in several experiments, were exposed to infection by sexual contact or inoculation. Of these, a summary report and experimental logs indicate that 234, 30%, were infected. But let's take a closer look at the details. They report that 12 women were recruited and inoculated with gonorrhea 5 to 14 days prior to the studies. While none of the females thus infected showed evidence of acute infection, such as a rich outpouring of thick yellow pus from the cervix, or by signs of pelvic inflammatory disease. All of them showed evidence of infection by cervical discharge, and all were culture positive. Already we can see the problems. They squirted heavy loads of Neisseria bacterial cultures into the prostitutes' vaginas, and then claimed they were, quote, infected because they can detect the same bacteria a week later. It was then claimed that this result in, quote, infections in the male prisoners in only 5 out of 138 exposures. But again, it was not clear if this was on the basis of detecting the bacteria rather than having signs or symptoms of the disease. They decided to step it up a notch and found they could achieve more impressive results by, quote, deep inoculation of the penis. This involved the painful procedure of traumatizing the penis by inserting a toothpick wrapped in bacteria-soaked cotton into the urethra. They claimed that this achieved a, quote, transmission rate of 33%. Again, this does not show that the bacteria is the cause of the disease or that it can transmit between humans to cause illness. It shows that if you stick a toothpick into a penis, then there will be unpleasant repercussions. In addition, there was no mention of any control experiments, so none of it was consistent with the scientific method. It was also fascinating to note that this alleged inoculation technique was originally developed by soldiers in World War II who did the procedure to themselves to secure hospitalisation and thus avoid going on active duty. Overall, it suggests the stories about frisky GIs picking up the clap from dodgy prostitutes during World War II was based on germ theory mythology. So then we get to the summary table of the CDC's report, and we see the figure of 30% in the number of subjects judged to be infected in the gonorrhea experiments. However, it can be seen that this number is massively inflated by the so-called membrane inoculation techniques involving inflicting trauma on the subjects. Somehow some extra sexual contact numbers popped up in this box, the details of which were not provided in the report. In any case, it doesn't really matter because, as we have seen from the methodology, there were no control experiments, no definition of what constituted gonorrhea, which is supposed to be a disease, not just detection of a microbe, and no evidence that one unwell human could make another human unwell. Of course, the germ theory narratives were beneficial to industries with vested interests. For example, penicillin went into mass production around 1944 and was considered a wonder cure for gonorrhea. And while antibiotics can kill bacteria and resolve symptoms, it is complicated by the fact that they have other effects such as anti-inflammatory properties. And the results of antibiotic therapy, even if beneficial, have nothing to do with whether something is transmitting. So if there is no proof that gonorrhea is a sexually transmitted disease that is caused by Neisseria passing between people, what is going on?
Firstly, there may be an association of Neisseria with disease in that it proliferates in response to an underlying problem, or in other words, a change in the terrain. On this account, germ theory struggles to explain why half of women with gonorrhea are asymptomatic, and this is because the detection of a microbe has been conflated with a disease. Allopathic medicine has developed a habit of combining the word asymptomatic with a disease, particularly when alleged infections are involved. Whenever you see case numbers of what is said to be, quote, gonorrhea, it is usually just the number of positive test results rather than a measure of disease burden.
Secondly, we are not denying that there are conditions which involve inflammation of the genital tract, pelvis and rectum. I once worked in a sexual health clinic, so I am familiar with the clinical presentations, which can range from trivial to very serious. My experience was that the cases tended to be in individuals who had other socioeconomic and health problems going on. Indeed, if you look at the risk factors for gonorrhea, it includes promiscuity, low socioeconomic status, racial group, and homosexual activity in males. Again, why would an allegedly highly infectious agent discriminate on the basis of socioeconomic status or race? Such a germ should be able to pass easily into other groups in the same population and start affecting them as well. While we can make no definitive claim that it is impossible for the disease to transmit, The scientific evidence suggests to me that it is another case of terrain theory holding more answers than germ theory nonsense. The mere detection of an organism such as Neisseria, particularly with high sensitive PCR kits, should not be considered a diagnosis in the absence of any disease. And if there is disease, it is better to examine lifestyle factors and general health status for the explanation as to what went wrong. Unfortunately, because of the focus on the contagion model, there is little published research available in this area, and we need to draw on the general principles of terrain theory. In that paradigm, it would make sense to avoid traumatic sexual practices, which are more common than many people think. Exposure to multiple sexual partners may also be detrimental for reasons that have nothing to do with microbes. Optimizing nutrition is in everyone's interests, and like most health concerns, it is better not to assume that there is one factor that has caused the problem. Every individual has a story, and that story will usually provide the answer as to what needs to be brought back into balance. Blaming another person and a microbe for personal health problems is unlikely to bring about true healing from what I can assess. Stay tuned for further videos examining the question of, is sexually transmitted disease a thing? And before anyone posts the question of, what about HIV? I suggest taking a look at my three-part series, The Yin and Yang of HIV, in particular part two, which deals with the sexual transmission arguments.
So that we don't lose touch, please find me at drsambailey.com and sign up for my free newsletter.
Of course, drsambailey.com, that's where you go. Make sure you get a copy of Virus Mania. You can have an online copy or a tactile copy, hardcover, or I think they'd be paperback, wouldn't they? Yeah. I've got an online copy. You'll get to about chapter 3 and then you realize, hey, we've been fooled. There's no viruses and there's no germs. It's all terrain theory or cellular theory. Next up, Dr. John Campbell is going to be revealing to us some very frightening information. He's very sort of, you've got to listen carefully with him because he's on YouTube, and so he has to be careful what he says. So but listen very carefully. They've been trying to pull a Swifty on us.
You're listening to Grant Edwards, 88.1 FM, The Wireless, the world at 5.
Would you go to Afghanistan? Would you go to Iraq? Would you go to Syria?
Afghanistan, no. Syria, no. Iraq, no.
Would you ever perform in Israel?
No.
You would not?
No.
Why? They would accept you.
I don't accept that.
You don't accept Israel, the state of Israel?
No, I don't accept them taking care of me getting in. I don't want to deal with the border control of Israel. It's just because they humiliate you.
And that's because you're Arab, or that's because...
Because they're
But they have 20% of their population is Arab. They're not leaving.
Yeah, but they're treating them like shit.
Not according to them. I've seen them. I've met them.
I met them too.
The chant from the river to the sea. Yeah, let's look at the map. Here's the river. Here's the sea. Oh, I see. It means you get all of it. Not just the West Bank, which was basically the original UN partition deal you rejected because you wanted all of it and always have, even though it's indisputably also the Jews' ancestral homeland. And so you attacked and lost and attacked again and lost and attacked again and lost. As my friend Dr. Phil says, how's that working for you? Look at what Mexico used to own, all the way up to the top of California. But no Mexican is out there chanting from the Rio Grande to Portland, Oregon, because they chose a different path. They got real and built a country that's the world's 14th biggest economy now, because they knew the United States wasn't going to give back Phoenix any more than Hamas will ever be in Tel Aviv.
A warm welcome to today's talk, Friday the 23rd of February. Now, the Office for National Statistics in my country has changed the way that excess deaths are recorded. So we know there's been problems with excess deaths for some time in the United Kingdom, 2020, 2021, 2022, and into 2023. Large numbers of excess deaths. So they're now recalculating the way that's done. And it looks in 2023 like the number of people dying are much less. Obviously, the number of people dying in the country is the same, but it now looks less. And I suspect the politicians or the government are going to be really pleased with this. Now, you will be pleased to see that there is complete transparency in how this is worked out. So this is from the Office for National Statistics site telling us how this is all worked out. So as you'll see, it's all fairly obvious and self-explanatory. So I hope you're hope you're reassured by the transparency there. To be fair, I do plan to talk to Professor Fenton about this and see what the heck is going on. But if we look at some real examples from this, and then we'll be looking at some diseases where people are still dying in excess numbers in a minute. But if we just look at this, so what we see here is the current method. So this is September 2023, week 21. Current method, 1,066 people died. New method, that goes down to 662. For week 24, it would have registered as 1,172. That goes down to 645. For week 32, it goes down from 427, more than usual dying, to 89, less than usual dying. So interesting that this new method is showing much lower numbers of deaths for 2023. Albeit the same number of people died, it now doesn't look like the same number of people died. Week 34, current method would have given 484, now down to 144. Week 46, and I've just taken random examples here. This is week 46, September 2020, week 46, 2023. The old method would have shown 378 excess deaths. Now there's 525 deaths less than would be expected. Again, 407 excess deaths down to 450 less than would be expected. I mean, this is just quite significant reductions, because I thought we had a problem here, but it looks like really we haven't. Week 51, it was 647 excess deaths. Now it's down to 260 deaths, less than we would expect. So we've gone from a situation here where in that week where there was 647 excess deaths, more than we would expect, to actually 260, less than we would expect. So there's actually less people dying than we would expect. As I say, we do need more clarification on this. Now, what we see, actually quite interesting, that these are the old and new methods. So 2020, current method would have given 84,000 excess deaths, new method 76,000, so that's a bit less. 2021, similar. 2022, the old method would have given 38,000. The new method would have given slightly more, 43. But into 2023, which, of course, the one that's politically sensitive now, that's gone down from, it's about a third of what it would have been, isn't it? So excess deaths are only a third of what they would be. Now, interesting as well, let's look at OECD statistics. Now, OECD statistics, in 2022, there was 52,000 deaths in the UK. So that's 52,000, a lot more than the Office of National Statistics figure. And the OECD for 2023, weeks 1 to 44, it's already 49,000. So way more, so it's at least 50,000 for the first 44 weeks. So the OECD is showing many more excess deaths than the Office for National Statistics. And the Office for National Statistics is now showing even less deaths than it would have done in 2023. If you can control the information, of course, you control the narrative. I find this concerning. You might find it completely innocent. Looking at deaths from various diseases. Now, this goes up to the end of 2023. So you see that there's a slight reduction, less deaths than you would expect. That's because of the delay due to Christmas. So this is ischemic heart disease. So we see that there's more ischemic heart disease. That's above the line. So anything above the line is excess. Anything below the line is decreased, less than we would expect. And we see that that is high for cardio. That's excess mortality. That's ischemic heart disease. So ischemic heart disease is the reduction in the blood supply through the coronary arteries to the myocardium, causing angina and myocardial infarctions. Would be the main pathologies there. This one here is for cerebrovascular disease. So that's diseases of the brain like strokes. And we see again that they're mostly higher as well throughout 2022 and into 2023. And of course, we know that these deaths are not, the majority of these deaths are not at all COVID related. This is heart failure. Now, we just see an incredible increase in heart failure. The last time there was less heart failure deaths than we would expect was just these odd instances back in 2022. So we're getting huge amounts of heart failure. Heart failure is where the heart is no longer able to generate sufficient cardiac output to meet the metabolic demands of the body, often with a backlog, often resulting in edema in the body or lungs. And of course, it can progress and is a terminal condition. An explanation for this would be nice. So lots of heart failure. This one here is for other respiratory diseases. So we see that far fewer people are dying from other respiratory diseases than we would expect. So ironically, after COVID, which was a respiratory, primarily respiratory pandemic, we're seeing less other respiratory diseases and way more cardiovascular diseases. Could there be something particular generating this trend? And the other one that is concerning, this is the last one I'll do, is cirrhosis of the liver. So this is deaths from cirrhosis of the liver in England alone. Again, we see a slight decrease, but that's due to delays reporting because this only goes to the end of 2023. But we see huge increases in the people dying of cirrhosis of the liver. Cirrhosis of the liver is basically scar tissue in the liver. What happens very often is there's an inflammatory process in the liver cells. The cells get damaged and they're replaced with scar tissue. That is cirrhosis of the liver. You end up with a small, hard, non-functional liver, and that will cause death through hepatic failure over time. So decreases from the Office for National Statistics that sound good. Are they really good? Still lots of people dying from liver disease and cerebrovascular disease, heart disease, ischemic heart disease, heart failure. Way more people dying in the Office for Economic Development, Office for Economic Cooperation and Development Statistics, OECD stats. 52,000 people dying in the OECD stats in 2022. Only 38,000 in the Office for National Statistics numbers. So we used to trust Office for National Statistics absolutely implicitly, but these are tensions that need to be explained. And we'll just finish with one further tension that really could be explained, or would like to see it explained. That's all the references for that. Check it out for yourself. Early heart disease rise to 14-year highs we've looked at already. Over 100,000 excess deaths involved in the cardiovascular conditions in England. That's just in England. Over 100,000 excess deaths just from cardiovascular disease. Normally, and there's 140,000 people deaths every year, one every 4 minutes, horrendous number of deaths from this. 2022, over 39,000 people in England died prematurely of cardiovascular conditions, heart attacks, coronary heart disease, strokes, an average of 750 people a week, the highest total since 2008. So who was it said there's lies, darn lies and statistics? I don't know, but this needs a better explanation, in my view, than posting that on the website. Yeah. See, this is obviously done by really clever people, isn't it? You know, the role of us morons is just to accept whatever they say.
Why don't you, you black, how come you don't believe white privilege exists? What you see?
Well, because I am black in color, but I don't have that dark mentality that most black people have.
Clearly.
I see, she said clearly, mm-hmm. I see that white people have the same struggles and things that we have in that.
What type of struggles do they have?
Their marriages work. They have to meet their children, help their kids grow up in the right way so that they can earn a living and be independent.
But they also have the majority of their fathers at home.
Right. And the reason for that is starting to change somewhat now, but the reason for that is because they are taking responsibility for that, whereas black men and women are not taking responsibility for that as they did prior to the civil rights movement. Black people are blaming it on their lack of self-control and self-containment. They're blaming it on white people while white people are working hard to keep it going.
You're listening to Grant Edwards, 88.1 FM, The Wireless, the world at five.
Is Elon Musk doing paying for this woman's legal fees? Is he interested in buying Disney, I wonder? Let's have a listen and find out.
If Elon Musk buys Disney, this is the path he's going to take. Gina Carano is suing Disney right now, and Elon Musk is paying for her lawyer bills. Why? Because typically if somebody sues a major corporation, they can't afford to go to trial. They will just settle out of court sometime. But Elon Musk says, that's interesting. I'll pay for that. You go ahead and go to trial with them. What happens if they go to trial? Well, then they have to release all of these documents and everything becomes public record that they don't want to talk about. And what happens to the stock price? It just keeps going down, maybe to a point where Elon Musk could afford to buy it for a pretty penny.